Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
That's right. It's time for political commentary. We've got Lara Greaves on the line. Morning, Lara.
Kia ora. It's good to hear that you've still got the horn thing.
Oh, yes. Classic trumpets.
Good way to wake up in the morning. Yeah, it's been a while, but yeah, kia ora.
Oh, we're so glad to have you back on political commentary, and we've got lots of good stuff to talk about today. Shall we start with local government elections? People seem to just not really be all that tuned in or excited, but is that typical of every year with local elections?
Yeah, honestly, it's almost like I've got a bit of a cheat sheet at this point, because every 3 years this comes around, the local mm-hmm. elections, and, you know, you get the calls up about this mayoral election, this the other election, bits and pieces from different media, and generally it's just like you can trot out the same lines as like, oh, people are disengaged. Yeah. Maybe the local election shouldn't be run by a for-profit company. You know, oh, there's some mayoral election. Oh, there's not enough media coverage. Oh, people don't know what local government do. And so it kind of gets a bit bleak, because I've been doing this for a solid decade now, and you just kind of every time it comes around, you've just got the same talking points. And it's you know, I'm part of the problem, clearly, but it's just that nothing changes. So we've had a couple of local government reviews about their functions and the way they could be restructured, but central government doesn't really seem willing to do much different. And it does seem like there's a real appetite for the Electoral Commission taking over the running of these elections, because, you know, people say, oh, well, let's have a sausage sizzle, let's do more fun in-person stuff relating to local government, and there's just not the resourcing, and like for-profit companies aren't going to try to up turnout or do more expensive things. So we're kind of in this, oh, we're disengaged, oh, we should do something, oh, we're disengaged, oh, we'll see what will happen. And yeah, there's just really not content around this election either. So there's some great media initiatives, but just not enough. So I mean, we're just in the cycle that will go around for years and years and talk about voter apathy and kind of wring our hands about turnout. And yeah, I mean, we've also got the Māori wards referenda in different seats, and we haven't really seen much about that and how that's going, or educational resources on those. So yeah, we'll see what happens, but I imagine that in 3 years' time I'm just going to be saying the same thing.
So you'd like to see more engagement and investment from central government in terms of access to resources and such?
Well, they've had two kind of reviews now that have said, well, this is what you need to do to get people more engaged. What's different ideas in them? And I think, you know, it's being a political scientist does get a bit bleak at a point, eh? Like being an academic in this area, because you central government at some point has to do something. Like they have to go, okay, we're just going to gamble, we're just going to try this thing. You know, like all of these experts and people working in local government are telling us to do it, so let's do it. And, you know, there's bits and pieces of talk around about whether you go to a four-year term for local government, whether you make it the same day as central government voting, or what you can do, but something needs to change, and it's just fundamentally not. There doesn't seem to be the motivation there.
We had a listener a while back who thought potentially if voting was online somehow, engagement would be put up. Is that a bad idea?
Well, it's so interesting, because the kind of corpus of academic literature on online voting say it's more of a rich get richer effect, so it's easier for people who vote heaps to do that. But that research is kind of a solid good decade old now, and like there's been a generational shift in doing things online. There's also been a behavioural shift since COVID, so as long as they can kind of sort out the security systems, I don't see why not. We recently voted in the Tamaki Makaurau by-election from Europe, and I was shocked how easy it was. It was much easier than voting in person. And that was, you had to get the Adobe PDF and sign the thing with your finger and do bits and pieces, but it was still pretty easy compared to going into a polling place. So, I mean, it'd be nice to have a really good investigation of that, but, you know, our IT systems for the Electoral Commission are underinvested in now.
Yeah.
Again, it needs central government to go, hey, like, we care about democracy, let's do something.
Totally.
For friends and whānau who come to you and want to become more engaged, where do you point them in the direction of in terms of resources?
Well, I was pointing them to that policy.thespinoff app, but actually it seems like a lot of the right-wing people haven't filled it out this time around, which is a bit of a shame. The good old little book, like get the little book that you get posted out. I mean, look people up. And heaps of people have websites. There was someone I was like, oh, I might vote for that person. And then I looked them up and I was like, no, not for me. But that's what I would say. You just kind of need to spend an afternoon of it. Like pour a wine, pour a tea, make a thing of it with your partner or your friends or your flatmates and go through them and kind of share your opinions. You've got to make an afternoon of it.
That's otherwise, a bit of fun doing it with your flatmates. Info. It's sort of like The Bachelor or something, isn't it?
Have a party, have an argument in good faith and then, you know, tick the box, put it in the post box, which I had to Google where my local one was, and get it done, and then you can feel like you've done something positive for the week.
We've got a couple of other things we want to talk about. Obviously, the big thing on people's minds this week has been Winston Peters at the UN General Assembly and our government's lack of recognition of Palestinian statehood. What do you make of all of this?
Yes, it's been an interesting one, Matt. Awful situation overall. In New Zealand, you know, where it has this genuinely, like, this is again from a political science academic perspective, not from a human perspective, because they have a lot of views on Gaza. But we always talk about New Zealand foreign policy as, you know, there's these different myths around New Zealand foreign policy and that, you know, we can only, you know, influence people so much. But then on the other hand, we always talk about New Zealand punching above its weight. Using that kind of boxing metaphor. Madeleine Chapman just summarised the headline so well in a headline on an opinion piece, which is New Zealand is punching above its weight in cowardice, which I still like. It's one of my great headlines I've ever read, I swear. Like, just a beautiful play on that real common foreign policy doctrine myth that we teach people about New Zealand foreign policy in first
year. I thought Madeleine Chapman's piece was brilliant, and when she said that... Winston Peters, if not when or something was what they were saying, and had the air of a sort of deadbeat dad promising that they were gonna get their act together soon.
It's just so confusing. Just do something again. Like probably my whole thought today on New Zealand politics at this point is, can someone just do something, please?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people somewhere. I've seen a lot of people drawing historical connections to sort of the Springbok tour and how that left such a stain on our history in terms of foreign policy. Do you see a connection there with what's happening now?
Yeah, look, fundamentally we're always like, oh, people don't really care that much about foreign policy or they don't vote on foreign policy. But, like, look, Palestine-Gaza has been a huge issue and people are really passionate about it. People over time have gotten more educated. They're more confident to speak out. They're more just following the issues. So I think a lot of people are quite disappointed, and a lot of people with minimal interest are disappointed in this kind of decision and this kind of rhetoric and not really standing up. Because again, we do like to think that we lead the world in various things. You know, we're always like talking about our nuclear free policy from much before I was born, let alone you were born, you know, like it's like part of our identity. And so this is really kind of quite disappointing in terms of not even keeping up with Canada and Australia. It's like, come on, we need to stand up there with them as our buddies and not follow this kind of basic tenet, this basic kind of direction. So it's incredibly disappointing, and I think it's one of those things where it'll contribute to people's votes.
It'll be really interesting to see the impact that it has in 2026, say, among other things. We've also had interesting sort of this letter from Luxon to Chris Hipkins about bipartisanship. Can you talk me through this? Because it's a little confusing, isn't it?
So it's interesting because we always talk about bipartisanship, because actually we've now hit this situation where we've got sort of Labour and National in the middle, got a couple of parties to the left, and Te Pāti Māori and the Greens, and a couple of parties to the right in New Zealand First Nations. We now don't have any centre-sitting party. So this leaves Labour and National in this kind of interesting situation. Again, every sort of 3 years, someone asks, oh, is there going to be a grand coalition? Could Labour and National go into government instead of and kick out the left and right? Which would be hilarious. But and actually, they probably do unite on a lot of points, so maybe they should actually do it. I personally would like to lock them in a room, like call it a citizens' assembly, lock them in like the Pullman or something, and just make them come up with plans.
That's a crazy social experiment, Lara.
Yeah. Like maybe we could get the police and the military on board or something. Probably not. And we'd probably all get arrested. But if we could do that, that would be a really good thing, because what's happened here is Luxon's kind of written to Hipkins saying, can you guarantee that there's going to be offshore exploration for natural gas for the next 10 years? And Hipkins is like, no, but like for it to be bipartisan, we have to talk from the start and come up with ideas from the start. And then there's been a whole bunch of different things in the media about where the letter was sent, when Hipkins found out about the letter. And this has actually been repeated quite a bit over the last couple of years where, you know, Labor and National said, oh, well, you talked to me on this, you talked to me on that. We saw it with Erica Stanford as well. And the Labor education spokesperson at the time, Willow Jean Prime, and that kind of back and forth. And we saw it a little bit, I was part of the Independent Electoral Law Review, and there was a bit of back and forth there as well. So I think this is quite a common thing between Labor and National, where someone's trying to get some kind of cross-partisan agreement. But again, it's like, it'd be great to see them figure out something long-term on infrastructure spending, as a lot of countries do tend to do that. So there is the guarantee there. For offshore oil and gas, maybe that's not a huge priority for infrastructure. Maybe sort out like bridges and roads and power companies. You know, those kind of fundamental bread and butter things that we all kind of need sorted. See also transport to Auckland Airport.
Yeah, it's sort of fascinating that Luxon wants this bipartisanship, but only on his terms. Or it's fascinating when this becomes a subject matter that's all of a sudden talked about so much, when it feels as though now more than ever there's so much sort of blaming and finger pointing from both Labor and National of, you know, the government that that National have inherited and the economy and whatnot. So I was surprised to hear about this letter.
Well, they're in a bit of a cycle. So because if you're a politician, you're in a political party, you've got this kind of social structure, you've got this embedded way of how to act around you. The Greens are not always the best at doing that. And Te Pāti Māori seem less so, where there's like these unspoken rules of what politicians, political parties do. And they kind of fight and argue with one another, and they don't work together because there's like this mythical idea that, okay, well, then you're going to lose ground with the electorate, you're not going to get as many votes, you might have egg on your face, you know, like you might be, you know, saving face and all those sorts of ideas. So we don't really see it that much, but like, hey, look, populism's rising around the world, like people are less trusting in democracy, we've got good old AI and all of those issues coming in with AI. You know, like, why don't we do something a bit different, eh? So that's my summary, I think, of my views today, is like, why doesn't central government do something a bit different? Like, again, we're just in the stagnation, and it might be time to see Labor and National do something, put in writing a plan, and just, can we not have to take a $100 taxi to the airport or some bus from Sky City, you know? Like, we sort it.
Yeah, oh, preaching to the choir on that one.
Yep.
So interesting. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lara. Really looking forward to hearing from you more in the future. And fascinating kōrero this morning.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Have a great day. See ya.
Yeah.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.